Hello, Guitar Smarts listeners. This is an important announcement. Please don't skip ahead. We start this podcast with a special message. Way back in 2021, Guitar Smarts had the pleasure of interviewing the utterly fantastic Matt Long. Matt is a multiple award-winning British blues guitarist and lead singer of the British blues band Catfish and hard rock outfit The Revenant Ones. He joined us for episode number 20 and was a truly gracious guest who spoke about his career, his childhood, guitars, and meeting his hero, Joe Bonamassa. Well, Matt needs your help. Through 2023, Matt has been undergoing treatment for bowel cancer, and his recent prognosis has meant that to extend his life and retain a chance of survival, he needs to seek private treatment outside of the NHS. Matt's family have set up a GoFundMe page that is linked in the Guitar Smarts link tree in the description of this podcast, and we at the Guitar Smarts podcast would like to invite each and every listener to consider donating towards this fund that could well save the life of one of the brightest guitar talents of our generation. Now is the time, folks. Head on over to the link in the description to find the GoFundMe page. Donate what you can. Your donation could save a life. Thank you. Enjoy the podcast. A long delay that repeats loads of times and you make a mistake. It's like someone repeatedly punching you in the gut, isn't it? It's like, I've not just been punched once, so I keep getting punched in the gut just slightly less until it's gone. And
Do you know how I hear it in my head? It's like, you're rubbish. You're rubbish.
It's just like, that's so true. Yeah. Reverb is king. Greetings, welcome back to the Guitar Smarts podcast. This week, we talk about the use of in-ear monitors without having a guitar amp on stage, following Kieran's first ever experience of this. This seems to be the way that a lot of pro gigs are these days. So how does that experience play out for a guitarist like Kieran, who's only used to having a blurring amp on stage behind him? We also talk briefly about the first ever Guitar Smarts guitar solo challenge and how that played out, and we revisit the recent controversy of the Nuno Bettencourt interview regarding the Rihanna gig and all the news surrounding that. As always, remember to like and subscribe to this podcast. This way you won't miss the next show. Use the link tree in the description of the show to get to our social media pages, especially the Guitar Geek Hangout page on Facebook, where you can get to know many other guitar nerds just like us. If you have any comments or requests for the show, you can reach out to us through our social media page. Anyway, that's about enough from me. Let's get to it. Dude, how are you doing anyway? You well?
Mate, I'm really good. How are you?
Fantastic. Yeah, I'm good. Had a good week. It's been a busy week, but a good one, you know. Not done much guitar playing this week. It's like, it's my last, I've got a week and 2 weeks off now. So, you know what work's like when you're just about to go on holiday.
Yes.
It's been one of those weeks.
Exactly. Manic.
It's been madness, but you know. It's all good. It's all good.
The end is in sight, though, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm looking forward. I'm going to pretty much have... Well, no, I'm not going to have a quiet afternoon. I do have a lot to do. But, yeah, mostly it's kind of like, you know, handing things over and whatnot. But anyway, regardless of that, well, how has your week been, mate? Have you done much guitar playing? What's new for you? Anything interesting?
So last week I had a dep gig with the frankly amazing Damien Lodrick band, the DLB, lovely wedding gig, which I can tell you a little bit more about. Actually, we might talk about that today, right? Because it was my first ampless experience, man. Mm. Uncharted territory for me. So let's talk about that a little bit later. So that was great. That was a nice gig. And then the rest of the guitar playing this week, mate, has been down to you and your guitar solo challenge thing.
Because you haven't done one yet, have you? You've not responded.
I know, man. Well, I've literally been...
At time of recording, you haven't, so...
Well, at time of recording, I haven't. But as we speak right now, my post is scheduled to go live in... about 2 minutes or something. I don't know why it was scheduled, but for some reason it scheduled itself rather than just posting it immediately. So it's gone now. And mate, what a great idea. First of all, thank you.
Because
it's kept me busy and thinking and practicing and I've written some comments on kind of my approach to it and things, but I listened to the track obviously first and then decided, right, I need to listen to this a few more times because there's some nice little juicy chord changes going on in different parts of it. And so I just listened to it for on and off for a couple of days, right? And just because I didn't have a chance to sit down and record. And then I had to figure out actually how I was going to record it because whilst I have a nice little guitar workshop here, I don't really have a recording studio set up. So I kind of needed to figure that out. So I thought, right, until I'm in that place, I'm just going to listen to the track, get some melodies in my head, which in itself, mate, was really fun just to do that. And then started to figure out how to record the whole thing. And actually, basically what I did is I used my Spark amp and took the USB out of that. It's kind of got like that kind of digital audio workstation facility in it. And managed to plug it straight into my iPad Pro. So I just bought a little USB to USB-C connector. So it just went straight into my iPad Pro, opened up GarageBand. GarageBand recognized it instantly. Mm-hmm. So I was able to use GarageBand, load your track into that, set all my input levels, but then use the Spark amp software that's also on my iPad Pro to basically shape my sound how I wanted it to. Perfect. And that just fed the signal straight into GarageBand. And so that was it. It was brilliant. And then I just...
Modern technology.
Yeah, man. I was like, wow, I just get an iPad Pro. I don't need a recording studio. And then, Damo helped me out with kind of saying, well, just record the video on your iPad, on your iPhone, another device. Like, so I just chose my webcam on my PC, which to be fair, isn't the best quality webcam, but then managed to take that video file off of the PC and then synced it all up in iMovie. So took the audio from GarageBand and the video and just synced it in iMovie. I'm saying this like it's like I'm explaining rocket science. There's people listening to me going, well, yeah, that's obvious, idiot. I'm just like, this is new to me, right? I'm figuring this stuff out, right? So that was half the battle, just figuring out how to record it. But tasty track and challenging and kind of really made me think. So for that, thank you, buddy. It forced me to not just improvise and noodle over it and do my usual kind of out of my tool bag kind of rock blues shredding.
I think you've referred to it previously as pentatonic shenanigans.
Thank you, mate. Exactly. That. I mean, it's still pentatonic shenanigans for me. There's no doubt about it, but we're going more major pentatonic than minor on this one.
With the pentatonic scale, mate. I mean, it's incredibly... useful and great sounding scale, right? Because you've got all the juicy notes in there that you need. You know, if you do major pentatonic, the only one you're missing is the perfect fourth and the major seventh. And the perfect fourth's not really useful all the time anyway. And the major seventh's only, you know, I mean, you can throw that in there occasionally, but the rest of the stuff in major pentatonic's all you really need. And the fact that it's a bit more kind of intervallic, so you've got wider jumps, kind of makes for an interesting sound. So nothing wrong with pentatonic scales, man, at all. But I kind of got inspired by that Paul David's video. You know, Paul David's he's done a few videos now, hasn't he? Of like,
I love them. I really love them.
They're so good because you get to hear everyone's approach to the same thing. And I thought it'd be cool if we did that for the Guitar Geek Hangout. And I was kind of thinking, well, what can I kind of write? And then I was just listening to Spotify like later in the day or whatever. And that Chris Stapleton track came up, you know, You Should Probably Leave, which if you haven't listened to the actual track, go and listen to it because it's an amazing song. Well, anything by Chris Stapleton is pretty much fantastic. What a voice and a great guitar player too. Check out the original track. Such a lovely track. So I thought I might just copy that and do like a shortened version, you know, basically just one time around of each section of the song. You know, intro, verse, chorus, middle section, and then like the solo section. And just play over that because it's simple enough that it's accessible to everyone. but it's still open to a lot of interesting ideas because it's not just like a blues 12 bar or something.
Yes,
so I just thought, I'll just do that. I'll just make a version of that backing track. And I'm going to do it again. I'm going to try and do a monthly thing. And I think I've chosen the song I'm going to do for the next one. It's going to be, because I've already kind of made a backing track for it previously. It's going to be Shot in the Dark by John Mayer, from his last album from Sob Rock, which is kind of cool, kind of.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I know that last 80s
feel kind of thing.
Yeah.
That's a fun one to play over as well. But how did you find kind of, did you compose a solo? Did you come up with generic ideas and try and target certain ideas that you had that you liked and improvise around them? What was your kind of approach to playing over it? This is the thing I love talking about.
Well, mate, I hadn't heard the original track, and I do love Chris Stapleton stuff. So my first temptation was to go and listen to that track just to see if I could echo or get any of the kind of melodic hooks from the vocal line or something rather than stealing the guitar line. But I thought, actually, do you know what? I'm so easily influenced that I really wanted. We've joked about this before, right? It's like the fantasy for the non-pro musician like me is, you get the call, which is our guitarist got hit by a bus. I mean, that's bad for him, but good for you because there's no other guitarists that we can get hold of. So can you come down and record? So I kind of wanted to take that mindset, which is I didn't want to, in this instance, be influenced by anything. So the really frustrating thing is, mate, is I've been having to avoid the Guitar Geek Hangout for the last couple of weeks because I haven't watched anyone's. I haven't even seen yours.
You're just trying to avoid influencing your completely ideas. Right, yeah.
Completely right. So I haven't heard the original track. I haven't heard yours. Damien told me that he's done one. Haven't heard his. And I think there might be a few others. I'm hoping that there are. Right. So the biggest thing I'm looking forward to at the moment is going and looking and listening to everyone else's so I can see how people have interpreted it because I've had these melodies like kind of, and they're very simple. There's nothing fancy in my playing, nothing whizzy, but it's just a few little hooks that I couldn't shift. And so that was my approach, really, was just to listen to the track and then start humming some little melodic hooks. And I really wanted to go for, like, you know, my kind of standard toolkit is all pentatonic shenanigans, as we discussed. But I couldn't hear that on this track. And so it was just, I just wanted to go for a more kind of vocally melodic feel, like almost like little vocal phrases, but being played on the guitar. So that's what it is. And the Les Paul didn't lend itself to that. It was felt to me like pure Strat territory. So
yeah, it is kind of Strat territory. Although I played my Les Paul.
Did you?
I did. Okay. Yeah. But that's partly because those pickups that are in it, those Iron Gear pickups are so more wide ranging in like possible tones. I can very easily get a Strat neck tone out of that.
Yeah, that's true.
Because the pickups are so great on that. And a really rocking, you know, bridge pickup tone. But it is a very Strat kind of suitable, you know, country song kind of thing.
Well, it felt like it to me, but that's the beauty of people interpreting it differently. So I can't wait to see what other guitars and tone choices and styles people have done on it. But for me, it was just about a bit of restraint, a bit of kind of sympathy to the chords going on. I know, I think you put the chord chart to accompany it, but I didn't, you know me, mate, my theory knowledge is rudimentary, right? So I just thought, I'm just going to listen to the changes that shout out to me. And try and accent a few of those elements. So other than really theoretically knowing what key the song was in, I didn't really approach it from a theory perspective at all in this instance because I just wanted to just do it all by ear and by feel and melodies that were in my head. So yeah, that was it really. That was my approach. And it took me an embarrassing amount of takes to do. I think it was definitely into double digits, probably 10, 11, 12 takes before I was happy. The first ones were shocking. They were just like painful. But yeah, kind of got there in the end. And it reached a point where I thought, you know what? In the last few takes, I'm playing the same thing. And so I think I've got where I would get to with this track. I can't hear it any differently.
Yeah, I kind of felt the same actually. When I was doing mine, it was kind of, I felt like I was collecting ideas that I was going to reuse. But I went through a serious amount of takes as well. I mean, the one I
put you did.
Okay. Geek Hangout was probably like my 20th take, something like that.
Oh, okay. Okay, cool.
Yeah, but it's kind of like part of it that is also, well, some of it is like you kind of, you know, it's red light fever, you know. You kind of fluff up when you're recording, whereas if you don't record and you play over it, then, you know, you're Nuno Betancourt all of a sudden. We'll talk about that in a minute. But,
we'll talk about that.
Yeah, and then you start recording and you kind of like, I keep making this little mistake here and there. But it's also like you're getting it out of your system. And then eventually, once you've purged it all after 20 takes, like you say, you've found this kind of, you've composed something. You've actually gone from improvising something to, I've composed this. Oh, that, you know, in the 8th take, I had this cool thing that I improvised there. And then for the rest of the takes, that stays, and that you end up building up these little things you like until you've got this composed solo. I think that's what I like the most about doing this. It's not an opportunity to show off chops. It isn't some kind of, you know, competitive situation. We're not trying to compete with each other. If anything, we're just trying to compete with ourselves each time we press record. And that's all it is. And it's kind of, what can I bring to this brief moment with my guitar to add to it in a way that satisfies and moves me? I mean, it's just the essence of why we listen to music and play guitar, right? Sorry to interrupt this conversation. However, if you're a regular listener, then you should definitely come and join us on our Facebook group, the Guitar Geek Hangout. Go and join the Guitar Geek Hangout on Facebook now before you carry on with this podcast. I'll wait here. Hey, welcome back.
So true, man. Yeah. I love the way you phrase that. That's the perfect articulation. And it's the and that's the thing. It wasn't that I didn't want to be like scared or embarrassed or kind of put off by other people's playing of it. I just wanted to challenge myself to see what I could come up with on my own.
Yeah.
And I'm really looking forward to hearing what other people came up with, because it'd be just really interesting to see people's approaches. And as you say, I wanted to make it a demonstration of my chops, but I couldn't. It just didn't happen in that way. So it's very simple. And, you know, I've just majorly based it around the main intro hook, that melody, and then just kind of taken different offshoots of it, because that seemed to just be there in the song anyway, and endemic as part of the song. So anyway, mate, tell me what you think. It'd be interesting. But first and foremost, thank you, mate, for doing that and spending the effort doing that, because I really enjoyed the challenge of having a go at it. So
fantastic. No worries, dude. I want to know more though about I want to know more about your gig this weekend though, and how you felt with, you know, with the in-ears and just in general, like, I know how I feel doing gigs with in-ears. It's a convenience, but it is also a compromise. That's the way it is for me. The payoff is not, you know, it's a convenience payoff versus a toned compromise kind of thing, and a feel compromise. But I'm just interested because it's your first time having done a gig with in-ears through a digital direct system, you know, not having an app behind you. What's your, how does your world view feel? How does that change now of that situation?
Thankfully, I actually quite enjoyed it, I must say. But I was really apprehensive and anxious about going into that. I mean, I've gigged for, decades, right? And in all that time, I've always had an amp behind me. Mm-hmm. So this was new. And I know the theory of it. And I know it's, you know, a lot of pro musicians and semi-pro musicians. This is de rigueur. This is how they do things now, right? It's like, not only convenient, but also in some instances required by venues from a sound limiting perspective. And there's a kind of health and safety piece around it as well, you know, protecting your ears and keeping things, you know, to a reasonable level on stage and being a good fellow bandmate in that by not having a blaring amp going. So there's a whole number of reasons why it makes perfect sense. But for me, it never been a requirement. So, I mean, the first thing to say is I had a massive amount of help, like helping me make that shift, right? Yeah. So, from Damien himself, you know, talking me through everything, like the week before, how it would work, what I'd need to prepare in advance in terms of that, things I could expect, all of that. He coached me through it brilliantly and sorted out, obviously, a nice set of in-ears for me and all the kit that I would need to do it. Shout out to Matthew Lake as well for the loan of the Strymon Iridium. I can see why that's a fantastic piece of kit and everyone raves about it. It was very easy to get for me to get my Fender clean amp platform sound that I normally use and then use my pedal board into it. So yeah, great piece of kit. And then basically it was just a very modern experience for me, right? I am used to, even when I'm doing wedding gigs, having a growling valve amp behind me and a scrap of paper on the floor with my set list, right? And a wedge that just, you know, gives me a little bit of monitoring for my vocals, right? So that's my world. And then to go from that to in-ears, fully professional setup with, I had my iPad Pro. I bought one of those little clip-on iPad mic stand things. Got a 20 quid one off Amazon. Worked perfectly, no issues. So I had that on my amp, on my mic stand. I had the kind of mixer software that we were using, the Mackie Mixer 5 or something, Mackie Fader 5, like that. But so that was all installed on there, and Damo had already pre-programmed the thing so it could just like import all the settings and stuff that I needed to. Showed me how to use it. That was all cool. I put all my charts because it was like 30 odd songs, all in different keys, or some that I'd, you know, never played before. So again, for me to do a gig basically reading as well was different. It's all chord charts, right? Nothing more whizzy than that. But I had on the iPad as well, I'd downloaded a set list piece of software, Easy Set List or something it was called. But it was worth it because I was able to put all my PDFs in there, arrange the set list properly, and kind of just have everything there so that for each song. So it was a very modern experience having charts and then all the in-ear monitor stuff there. But I must say the ability to have your own bespoke monitor mix in your ears for every other bandmate, so you could hear exactly what you needed of them, to be able to push the bass and the kick drum to my preference in my ears so I could really feel connected with them. I had some people had described it to me as a feeling of being disconnected from the gig. Mm. And I kind of get what they're saying, but I didn't feel disconnected from the band in my playing. I felt disconnected from the audience.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Completely. I feel the same when I do in-ears.
Right. Okay. So maybe that's what people meant in terms of disconnected from the gig. But in terms of connection from the band, it was very immediate. I could hear everything I needed to. Best backing vocal monitoring that I've ever heard for my own vocals. Mm-hmm. So yeah, man, I definitely wouldn't be put off doing another gig like that. It was quite enjoyable, actually. Definitely less fatiguing. Nice to come home and not have that ringing in your ears. Mm-hmm. Definitely nice to not have to be riding like my volume settings on my pedal board or my amp throughout the course of a gig as things invariably get louder and things. Once we'd sound checked and set it, I think I made a few little tweaks to other people's sound so I could hear them in my ear when we started the gig, but that was it. Once it was done, it was done. So yeah, I have no idea what my front of house sound was like. That's the other weird thing, right? Yeah. I left that to Damien. He sound checked front of house. He's a great engineer. He's got good ears. He knows what I like my guitar to sound like. So, you know, I'm not sure I got perfectly my normal sound, you know, even in my ears, but it was close enough in many respects. And I enjoyed my in-ear sound that I was getting and that I presume the rest of the band was getting, and I just let somebody else worry about how it sounded front of house, which is, again, another weird concept for me. So, yeah man, overall, pretty good.
I'm so pleased for you. I feel the same when I do gigs on in-ears, which is not all the time, not every gig. Most gigs I do direct from the Helix to the PA. I very rarely have anything behind me. But most gigs I have a wedge. I prefer a wedge over in ears. And if the type of gig and the environment allows it, you know, I'll have my own wedge and then I can have a nice you know, loud speaker coming back at me on stage, and you know, I can hear everything great. The last gig I did a couple of weeks ago was on in-ears. And it's the same thing. It's kind of, you just plug in, you plug straight in, obviously, to the PA. There's a sound guy there at that gig. So I'm like, I don't really even care about front. I can forget about front of house. You know, my job is not to be, is to care about the overall thing now. I've got two things to care about. One is my guitar playing and making sure I've got my sound set up okay. And number two is being able to make sure I can hear everyone in my monitor mix so that I can play accordingly with the rest of the band, you know, and that's it. And then, you know, I do find, I feel like I suffer from not having enough room sound, you know, in my, you know, like I feel like it's a little bit, sometimes a bit more claustrophobic sounding. But if we've, if the sound guys set up overheads over the drum kit, then I tend to just, for the drum sound, I just usually go for the overheads alone and a bit of kick drum. And then, you know, any mics, any close mics that are on the drums themselves, I won't put any of that in my monitor mix at all, because just having the overheads and a bit of kick gives me the closest thing to sounding like an acoustic kit in a room. And then I find you get a lot of ambience from those overheads that makes it feel like you're listening to the room again. And then everything else just kind of, you know, you just mix in accordingly. And then I feel comfortable with that sound. So I agree. It does disconnect you from the audience. And that can be frustrating when you like, if you really enjoy the entire atmosphere of a gig, of both what your band's playing and, you know, what's happening in the room, then in-ears are going to kind of ruin that part for you. But from a jobbing, getting your job done perspective, convenience of sound and everything, it's great. It is really good. And also, I mentioned this, I think, to you in a message the other day. Rory Harvey made a really great point to me recently about setting up all his sounds from his Helix using the, you know, we'll only use the in-ears he uses for gigs now, you know. I often use these headphones for like setting up my sounds. I've got a decent pair of, you know, Sennheiser Pro headphones, but that's not what I wear when I gig. And he made a good point that, the people he thinks about now when he's setting up his sounds is not the audience. It's the other members of the bands that he's in. Because if he can make sure that they are really happy with his guitar sounds and he's getting as accurate as possible guitar sounds for the songs in the set list, it's the other guys in the band who are going to give him repeat gigs. It's not the audience, you know. The audience is only getting married once. You know, and whereas maybe not, you know, but yeah, you know what I mean? It's kind of like those other guys in the band who he may be depping with or whatever. If he impresses those guys, he'll get more repeat gigs. And so that's something I'm going to start doing. I'm going to start when I'm setting up my sounds or doing, you know, recording or anything like that. I'm going to start using the same in-ears that I use for gigs, which are not expensive ones, just some fairly cheap ones I got off Amazon. But that's what I hear when I'm gigging. So it's a really, really,
it makes a lot of sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. You wouldn't.
No, go for it, dude.
I was going to say you wouldn't expect the same set of speakers to respond in the same way, even if it's been driven by the same source, right? So those in-ear monitors are a different set of speakers with different dynamic frequency response to a good set of headphones or just a different coloration, right? And that's amazing how that can differ with your pedal board settings and things. So I did my kind of pedal board settings and I was using I used my American Deluxe Strat as well for the gig, because it was that type of gig that needed the different tones from a Strat with a humbucker in it rather than my normal Les Paul. So I needed to reconfigure my pedal board settings. So I did that at home by using the Iridium that Matt Lake had lent me and everything, but just ran it through my alto to kind of get things roughly there. But again, I had to kind of almost redo that once I got to the gig, and then it was through the in-ear monitors, because obviously the alto is a different speaker to using the set of in-ears. And
so your
point about how Rory said to kind of sound check his pedal board and stuff using those in-ear monitors is just really good common sense logic, right? And then you know, A, when you get to the gig, it's going to be much quicker to make any small tweaks, but you also know that more than likely that's what other band members are going to hear, because they're going to be using in-ears as well. So yeah, good little tip that.
Absolutely, really good. Yeah, so just a quick one, I wanted to just quickly ask you, like, were your thoughts on the Strymon Iridium? Because you said you mentioned quite briefly you managed to get a decent sound out of it, but
I did.
Thing's got a really great reputation for this exact purpose, right?
It does. Firstly, I think I didn't spend a huge amount of time with it. This was my first experience with it. But it was intuitive to use, which I really enjoyed. Very simple. You know, it basically has, you know, some little toggle switches, three position toggle switches, which basically you tell it what type of amp you want it to emulate. So it's got a Fender style amp, a Vox style amp, and a Marshall style amp, and then another toggle switch, which is basically three types of cabinet response, really. Everything from like a small 1x12 up to a 4x12 and whatever it was in between, a 2x10 or something, I think, maybe, can't remember. But so that regard, very simple EQ, three band EQ, bass, middle, treble. And I think the mid control does a little bit more in terms of contouring and stuff like that. And then some pretty simple on off switches and a favorite setting. So I, in my head, I built the Iridium up to be this really complex piece of kit. It wasn't, at least for me to get a usable tone out of it and get close to my amp setting. So that was cool. Really well made, really nicely built. Stylistically looks really cool. My hesitation is around, I had the chance to A/B it in my home setting versus what I normally carry around in my gig bag as my emergency get out of jail pedal. So I don't know if you remember this, but when we were talking about being like a good Boy Scout or ready for gig emergencies and stuff, that, yeah. Thing. Do you remember that episode? I told you about a piece of kit that I bought because I was still and am still probably wedded to using a proper amp. But if my valve amp goes down, I'm not carrying a spare amp.
No, exactly.
So I bought myself the Joyo pedal brand, which many people will know, super budget. And they do a amp in a box pedal. Hmm. They do a few amp in a box pedals. Which are effectively one trick ponies in some regard. So they do one called the American Sound one, which is basically a Fender amp in a box pedal. They do another one called British Sound, which, you know, lo and behold, is a Marshall amp in a box pedal, right? But I've got both of those, but I carry the American Sound one with me in my pedal board kind of pocket, because I've used that before in rehearsal studios and stuff where I've gone direct into the mixing desk and through the PA because I didn't want to lug an amp around. And I had the chance to A/B it versus the Iridium just to do that very basic functionality that I need, which is take a signal out of my pedal board and before it goes into a PA speaker, create the sound of a Fender style amp. With that cab simulation and the controls that a Fender amp would have on it. And I must say, I got near identical tones from the Joyo American Sound as I did from the Iridium.
Wow.
So for me, for what I need, I would say the American Sound for me represents a better use of my money. The Iridium pedal, I think it's still like what, going on for £400 or something,
Like that. Something like that.
It's a serious pro piece of kit. Now, in terms of functionality, you get so much more from the Iridium, probably in terms of construction, components, but also I think you can load in your own impulse responses and different cab simulations, and you can tweak a whole bunch of different settings on the Iridium, which, when you look at it in that, and you're getting three at least three different kind of different amp styles already built in, right? So already it's three times more potentially versatile than the Joyo pedal. So I guess horses for courses, right? I was impressed and found the Iridium really easy to use and get my sound from it, and I can see why it's a really well regarded piece of kit, but I'm not going to rush and spend £400 on one of them, or even secondhand spend a few hundred pounds on it, when actually for my purposes, for what I need as a get out of jail card, the Joyo pedal, which was like £40, £40, gives me the same tone. So it's got one cab simulation built into it. You can tweak the control on it to give you everything from like a deluxe Fender reverb sound all the way through to a more tweedy Fender amp sound, so you do get some customization in it, but it's a pretty simple piece of kit. But actually, did the job really, really well when I AB'd them at home. So
that's amazing that you managed to get that Joyo pedal sounding, so close to the Strymon. Not that that's any kind of indictment of Strymon or anything like that. No. I know what you're saying. It's just you still had this incredibly cost-effective option that allowed you to, you know, do the same job as what the Strymon does, but you treat it differently. Like you say, you know, you treat that as a get out of jail. You know, this is if your amp goes down or if you're in a situation where you need to go direct for whatever reason that is. You've got this excellent option that's cost effective. You haven't invested £400 in something that's spending 99% of its time sat in a gig bag waiting for a, you know, a situation that you don't want to happen anyway.
Absolutely.
Which is awesome. But what I wanted to share with you, because if you're one of those people who maybe doesn't want to buy one of those Joyos, not that there's anything wrong with it, but maybe you just want something a bit more well-branded or something more that you know better, but you don't want to spend the money on a Strymon, then... Mm. I've just put a link in the chat, but for those listening, TC Electronic have just recently come out with a new range of pedals that are effectively there to fill that same marketplace.
Wow.
So, and one of them that they've come out is basically to kind of rival that Strymon Iridium, the American Sound, some of UA Audio's pedals, and they're really cost effective, £130.
They are.
We're looking at now, TC Electronic Ampworks Vintage Series. It's basically meant to be a Fender Deluxe, a 65 black Fender
Deluxe. It looks like it, right?
Exactly.
The knob style and everything they've used.
That's exactly right. And it's... It's basically the same as the Strymon's, more kind of American sounding setting that you can get on that. And it's got a reverb built in, which is cool. The thing I like about the Strymon Iridium, though, you've got like a room sound that you can add on, can't you? So it's not necessarily reverb. It's meant to give like reflective sounds that make it feel like it's in a room. Did you use
it
that?
It does. I did, mate. Again, I thought, oh, that's a really great setting. It's almost got a built-in reverb, right? Because that is the one thing that when I'm using that Joyo pedal, obviously, I then don't have reverb on that. Yeah. It's too simple for that. And because I utilize the reverb normally on my Fender amp, which is a beautiful reverb on it, I don't have a reverb pedal on my board. So as well as carrying the Joyo pedal in my gig bag, I also carry a little... I think it's Moore. I've got a little Moore reverb mini pedal as well, because the two have to go hand in hand, because otherwise I've lost my reverb functionality. So I thought, oh, the Strymon's got this room function on it. I'm really pleased you mentioned it. Mm. It does act like a reverb. It acts like a room reverb. And anyone that has heard and played with like room reverbs, you know it's a very close kind of subtle reverb. So even on maximum setting, it does add a bit of space around the sound and stop it feeling so like in the middle of your direct. Head if you're using it. Exactly. Yeah, direct. Right, thank you. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It stopped it doing that and kind of spread it out a little bit, which was nice. But as much as I played with that at home, I realized I did then need to bring my little reverb pedal to the gig as well. So my signal chain for that gig was my pedal board. And then I had off my board, I had the little Moore reverb pedal, and then out of the reverb into the Iridium. It needed that, and I'm glad I brought it. So So yeah, that's a good consideration, is if you're going to be doing that frequently, like keep a reverb pedal on your board. I didn't find the Iridium room thing was enough to give me that my spacious sound.
Yeah. I kind of like the sound of a hall reverb or quite a lot of plate reverb or even spring. I mean, I do prefer feeling like there's this wash after the note kind of thing. It's not like I always play with ridiculous amounts of reverb or anything, but for me, it just feels a little bit too unforgiving without it. Do you know what I mean? It's actually totally. Kind of, if anything, it also kind of hides things. It's flattering as you're playing as well.
Massively. Yeah. I hate my playing without reverb. It's kind of like too in your face and revealing, whereas reverb just gives you that nice wash, a bit of sustain to your sound, and just allows you a bit more thinking time before your next, like microseconds, right? But just something that allows it to just relax you rather than...
Because it's not kind of like, it's not the same as delay, is it? Like if you've got quite a decent amount of reverb, you know, like say you've got the spring reverb, like this PV Bandit that I've got, you know, I love playing through that on the clean channel with the reverb on maximum, because it's not overwhelming. It's not like a mix control where the mix of the reverb comes in as more of the dry signal comes out. It's not like you're going... It's not like a balance. It's you're bringing in more of the reverb, but not taking away the dry signal. So with it on full, I've just got this wonderful spring reverb sound that just goes on for a good 5 or 6 seconds. It sounds kind of like I keep playing, you know, Wicked Game by Chris Isaak. That's that kind of thing.
Great tone. Wow.
And it's so good. And if you make mistakes, it kind of gets so like mixed in all this reverb, and then it kind of, the mistake kind of disappears. Whereas if you've got like a long delay that repeats loads of times and you make a mistake, it's like someone repeatedly punching you in the gut, isn't it? It's like, I've not just been punched once, so I keep getting punched in the gut just slightly less until it's gone. And then
Do you know how I hear it in my head? It's like, you're rubbish.
You're rubbish. It's just like, that's so true. Yeah. Reverb is king. I love reverb. I could never have a rig without reverb. Never. Mm. You could quite happily give me a guitar amp and no pedals, and just say, you've got to do the gig on the amp, and I'll be like, okay, I'll set up a loud enough lead sound and I will use my volume control to get the clean. I can do that. I've done that before.
Yeah.
I don't do it now, but I've done it enough times before to know I could get through a gig if somebody stole my pedal board. But if the amp you gave me didn't have reverb, I'd be crying. You know, I've got to have reverb. I love it. It's just, you've got to have that feeling of that kind of wash that happens after the notes bloom, and you kind of got this thing. It's just, if you're listening to this, you're a guitarist, so you understand.
You get it. Yeah. If you're listening to this and you're not a guitarist, then
unless you're playing AC/DC. If you're playing something like AC/DC, you know,
is that right?
I think so.
Dry, very dry.
Then I'd want it to be a lot more dry, but not completely dry. Yeah. But if you're playing something like Riff Raff by AC/DC from the Power Rage album, which is actually quite a fast riff, you know, at the beginning, and actually the whole thing's ridiculous. If you've never heard Riff Raff by AC/DC, go and listen to it. Amazing. Still Bon Scott era AC/DC, and it's such a great. The Power Rage is a great album, actually. That work, you know, you want to play all that stuff pretty dry, but it's just a little bit of reverb. Just a bit.
Nice. I love this pedal that you've shared with me. This kind of is probably for me exactly what I will consider going out and buying. If I do any more depth gigs or we decide to move my existing band over to in-ears, this is exactly what I'll go and get.
Yeah.
And why am I saying that? Because I've just said the Joyo does everything I need it to. This is no slur on Joyo, but the reason I decided to take the Iridium with me is because, you know, intrinsically, you've got to expect a £400, you know, well-renowned pedal to be that more reliable in a gig setting, right?
Yeah.
My Joyo pedal is a inexpensive, really nice sounding pedal. appears to be well made, etc. But there's got to be limitations and things that I should manage my expectations around it being priced at that price point, right? So, you know, that, as I said, it's not a diss against it. Maybe people are using these Joyo pedals gig in, gig out, and never had any reliability issues, in which case I'll absolutely, you know, reverse my stance on it. But for me, I would want the security of going out with something that I think was would be a little bit more robust, understandably so, because it's more expensive and it's built with stronger components to be more roadworthy. And so the TC Electronic range of stuff, we know, I use a bunch of their pedals. They are, you know, gig-worthy bits of kit. And I think they've priced this one really sensibly. That's exactly the price point I'd be looking to spend on an amp in a box pedal if I was using one regularly.
It's pretty brilliant. Packed with features.
They've done
well,
it again.
I'm just looking at the specs of it now. You know, it's got you know, two channels, actually. I didn't realise that.
Yeah.
It's actually a dual channel thing. Fairfully emulates the tone of a 65 Blackface Reverb Deluxe, which is, you know, that's one of the holy grail amps, really.
It is.
Got a bright switch on the back. I added middle control modification based on the middle knob of a Blackface Twin Reverb. So
beautiful.
Dedicated DI output. Excuse me. That's the first guitar smart sneeze, I think. It's got Celestion cream back simulates IR, so it's gig ready from the DI output. And that's kind of cool, actually. It's got the DI output is separate to the normal output, so you could still actually use it as a normal pedal if you wanted, as like a dual channel overdrive. You know, that's not really.
But this has got reverb built in. Yeah. This has got reverb built in.
Actual reverb built in. Headphone output equipped with the very same Celestion cab I impulse response. An optional bypass mode can be activated by pressing the reverb and channel foot switches at the same time. That's cool.
Wow.
Works modeling technology designed and engineered in Denmark. Yeah, it's really that. I mean,
it's got the little bright switch mod on the back as well, which the Fender amps have. This is a great piece of kit, mate. This is it. This is what I'd get.
It's got some good reviews. Not many written reviews, but it's got a 4.5 out of 5 so far.
Nice.
Yeah,
and they do a Marshall one, and I think they do a Vox one as well.
Yeah,
it's brilliant.
TC Electronic, we've got to always something by now, haven't they?
Surely, ridiculous. Man. I mean, they definitely owe us for releasing price-sensible quality pieces of kit. Absolutely. Yeah. No, it's absolutely in our it's absolutely, that's what we like. Yeah. That's what we like.
Oh, I should say as well, just to, you know, if you're listening to this and thinking, oh yeah, all good and well, I do like, you know, the idea of having a, you know, an amp in a box kind of thing on my pedal board, but I don't want the deluxe combo. Well, TC have also released the Jim's 45, which is quite obviously meant to be a JTM 45 version, and the DC 30, which is obviously going to be, well, I'm assuming an AC 30 or a matchless DC 30. I'm assuming the AC 30, because the DC 30 is directly.
Yeah,
so a couple of options there. I'm sure they all sound fantastic. But the last thing I wanted to wrap up with today, mate, was just
the
Nuno Bettencourt thing, that whole palaver. Because we spoke about it last week, and we were kind of talking about how, you know, pretty ridiculous it was of him to make those claims. And as of, I think, last night, he's very humbly apologised on his Instagram page about, you know, he thinks it's all gone out of hand. He doesn't really agree with what he said, and he doesn't know why he kind of said what he said about Slash and things like that. And he's apologised to Richard Fortus, who he had a bit of a go at. I think it's great to see him come out and kind of, you know, correct what he said. You know, he's redeemed in my eyes. And the thing is, though, it's not necessarily, it's not that he was wrong in the way I feel about it. It's not necessarily that he was wrong in the first place. He is incredible. There's not many people who can kind of hold a torch to him. You know, I think I said to you, I think Paul Gilbert's up there with him. You know, I think he's an incredible guitar player who could, you know, go head to head with him all day long in terms of chops and ability and versatility. And Paul Gilbert is also way more humble than Nuno Bettencourt showed himself to be. But we kind of, you know, spoke a little bit critically of what he'd said last week. And I think after what he said and come out and apologised for today, and, you know, kind of correcting what he said and owning up to it, you know, really specifically owning it. You know, he says, I own this.
Yeah.
It's a problem kind of thing. I apologize. I think, you know, we should also mention this week, you know, how great it is that that's a great example to set, not just as a guitarist, but as a human being, isn't it? To be able to own up to something and say, hey, I made a mistake. You know, so fair play to him.
Yeah, I think that's well said, mate. I mean, since our podcast episode last week, he went on another tirade, right? And started throwing his toys out of the pram against another guitarist who's incredible as well, who's just standing up for his bandmate, Richard Fortus. So, look, but as you said, I just watched that video on his apology, and I thought, okay, before I watched it, I thought, all right, let's see how you're going to, you know, put your foot in your mouth even worse on this occasion, or have another pop at somebody else. And I must say, I was pleasantly surprised. Yeah. He literally owned all of his mistakes, every single one, and gave real good context for, you know, sometimes you get it wrong.
Yeah.
And this time he really got it wrong, and he's literally called out exactly why he got it wrong and apologized profusely, and it comes across as authentic and genuine, not just a PR backpedal. So fair play to him, you know, for doing that. It takes the bigger person to know when they've massively cocked up.
Yeah.
And he's done that. So yeah, good on him.
Fair play to him indeed, mate. Indeed. Well, there we go. So I think another good one, another good chat. Thanks, mate. I really enjoyed your gig report from you know,
thanks,
your first in ears experience. You've it's a learning experience. I'm the same as you. I still prefer something loud on stage behind me. I just don't do those kind of, I don't have those opportunities anymore. But you know, it's at least it's convenient, you know. At least you didn't have to carry that in from a car park that's 100 yards away from the venue.
I know.
Over a muddy field.
I know.
You know,
that was nice as well.
That
man.
Is the thing. Sometimes you get those gigs and you just think, thank my lucky stars, I'm not carrying a 4x12.
Yeah.
And a,
yeah.
Can you imagine? Oh,
it's been a few days since then, yeah, but yeah.
No. Well, I
yeah,
get
it's the way it is. The way
4x12.
Yeah, I'm still not giving up my my little Fender combo, no. But anytime soon. But yeah, it was a good experience, and thank you to you for your help and advice on what to do with and what to expect. Thank you to Damien as well for his massive amount of prep and coaching, and the bass player of the DLB, Dave as well. Superb, got me out of a pickle when I couldn't figure out the signal chain and what was going wrong, and some weird phantom power switch had gone the wrong way and stuff. So you know, another great example of bandmates helping each other out as well. So yeah, it was a good gig, a good experience. Thanks to them.
Fantastic.
And to your help. All right, buddy. Cool. Right, well,
yeah,
good chat.
Always good to catch up. I think it'll be a good few weeks until we have another one, mate. But you know, such is life. It's the summer, you know. So if you're listening to this, it might be a few weeks before the next podcast. But we usually have a break in the summer, anyways. We're having family holidays and things. So yeah, man. Have a good few weeks. I'll see you next, and look forward to another catch up soon.
Always, buddy.
Take care, mate. Speak soon. Thanks so much for listening. If you like what you hear, then why not give the rest of our shows a good listen too? And if you love our podcast and are a regular listener who wants to support the show even more, then consider buying us a coffee over on our Buy Me a Coffee page. Anyway, best wishes. See you next time on the Guitar Smarts podcast.